need to love you. And
I should get a series ready. All right, so I'll say good morning. Ashkech to for preparing the coffee this week. Thank you. And Ashkech to Saeed. And it's good. Oh. And it'll. Oh. I'm not going to ask where you're going with that. And Ashkech to Saeed for bringing it out. All right. So I'll say, let's go back there. So we left off. Today's daf is Yud Gimel. We left off on. Excuse me. Today's daf is Yud Dalet. We left off on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. So just quickly, let's actually pick up from the Tana Rabbanan again. Five lines up from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan, Kohen Gadol Makrivoni. Kohen Gadol goes ahead and offers these karbanos in the state of aninos. Remember, when we speak about aninos over here, aninos in this particular context means that it's the day in which he lost the relative. Whether or not burial did not occur yet, usually in these kind of circumstances. So the first day of loss is called aninos. By the time nightfall arrives, there's still a concept of aninos, but that's rabbinic aninos. That's not biblical aninos. So Kohen Gadol gives his carbon even when he's an oni. Ve'eino ochel. However, again, although he offers the carbon, he does not eat it. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, "Eino ochel shelo hutra kan ela avoda." The kachim asurim la'onin kavachomrim mimaiser hakal she'amr Torah. So remember, because we know that the Kohen Gadol is permitted to do the avoda, but Lamaisi, he can't eat. If there are any karbanos that he offers that have a consumption component, he can't eat it. And Rashi says, we learn it out from Meiser, that since when it comes to Meiser, so the Torah says that the person has to make a declaration, I have not eaten from it in a state of aninos. If you can't eat from Meiser in a state of aninos, you certainly can't eat of karbanos. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Huda says, kol yom. Rabbi Huda says, the whole day. My kalayom, what does that mean? Amar Rav alone, it's chalavi mitoch beso. So Rav says, you know what it means, kalayom? It means literally, if the Kohen Gadol is an onen, and let's say he's not home, excuse me, let's say he's not in the Beis HaMikdash, he's at home that day, we bring him to the Beis HaMikdash for him to do the avoda. Only Abayi says, and again, as Rashi, we spread this yesterday, as Rashi points out, Rav's logic is in order to take his mind off the loss. Amalei Abayi says, what are you talking about? Hashla Rabbi Huda Fuki Mefakin Onlei. I will say, according to Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that if the Kohen Gadol becomes an Onein in the Beis HaMikdash, we actually remove him from Avoda. Desanya, Hayo Omeit Umakriv Al Gabi HaMizbeach. Listen to this case. A Kohen Gadol is doing his Avoda on the Mizbeach. Vishama Shemes Lomes. And what happens? Literally, mid Avoda, he hears that he lost one of the seven close relatives. Maniach avodaso, he leaves his avoda on the side, the yotze, and he leaves Divrei Rabbi Huda. So also Rabbi Huda's position literally is that if a Kohen Gadol becomes an onen in the middle of avoda, he stops. Rabbi Yossi says, Gomer es avoda. No, excuse me, Yigmar es avoda. Rabbi Yossi says, no, he doesn't have to stop. Rather what? We let him finish up what he is doing, and then he stops. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Lemaisa, we stop the coin in the middle of the avodah, it becomes an owning. So it can't be when Rabbi Yehuda says kolayom can't mean what? It can't mean that we bring him from home to do the avodah, because here we're saying that if he's in the middle of the avodah, we stop him. To which the Gemara says, and I will say again, just to clarify, this price is actually talking about a regular coin. Rashi points out over here, Hashta Rabbi Yehuda fuki mefakinale lehejot. This is by a Kohen Hedjot. So by a Kohen Hedjot, Rabbi Huda holds that if he's doing the Avoda and he finds out in the middle of the Avoda that he's a Kohen, then, excuse me, this is a Kohen. If he finds out in the middle of the Avoda that he's an Onein, right, then he must stop. So the Gemara is saying, if a regular Kohen, when he finds out that he's an Onein, he has to stop. Okay, so a Kohen Gadol, what does a Kohen Gadol have to do? Kohen Gadol has to keep on trucking. He keeps going. He has to keep doing the Avoda. But to say that if he's not in the Beis HaMikdash, we're actually going to bring him from his house to do the avoda seems a little far-fetched. To which the Gemara says, "Ela Amar Rava." Therefore, Rava says, "My kolayom." What does kolayom actually mean? Top of Yodalit, Lomar She'eno Oved kolayom. Oh, you know what it means, Rabosai? It means that he does not do the avoda that entire day. Why not? Top of Yodalit, Shema Gzera Shema Yochal. There's a concern that he may come to eat of the karbanos. Look at Rashi. Lomar she'ino obed kolayom ad halayla. He does not do the avoda that entire day until nightfall. Imbala haktir chalavim ve'imurim yachtir. So again, any avodah. So if he wants to go ahead and burn some of the sacrificial limbs, that he could do. But we don't let him do any kind of avodah that has a consumption component. Why? Gezeira shem yochal. Because we're concerned that he might come to eat. Rashi says, because remember, that entire day he's not permitted to eat the sacrificial parts from the Torah. So we're only concerned about that day. We're not concerned about that night. As I mentioned before, that night also has a status of aninos, but that's aninos dirabanan. So also, what Rava therefore suggests is that when Rabbi Yehuda says kolayom, kolayom means that we don't let him do the avoda that entire day. Why? He's permitted to do the avoda. What are we concerned about? We're not concerned about the avodah, we're concerned that he may come to eat the karbanos, which again is a logical gezerah, since at the end of the day he's used to eating these sacrificial parts. We're concerned that he may come to eat of the karban. Therefore, in order to avoid any type of prohibited consumption, we say he's not going to do the avodah that day. Amarli Ravada bar Avala Rava, Umi Gaz Rabbi Yehuda Shem Yochal. Does Rabbi Yehuda actually hold of this gezerah that he might come to eat the karbanos? So I will say, therefore, what comes out over here is the Braisa says that a Kohen Gadol goes ahead and is makriv onen, but does not eat. Rabbi Yehuda says that even though technically he can be makriv onen, we don't allow him to be makriv onen. Why? Why? Lest he come to eat of the karbanos. So that's the fundamental machlokas unfolding over here. So the Gemara says, now is that true that Rabbi Yehuda holds gezeira shem yochal? Is that true that Rabbi Yehuda holds that we're concerned that if you have the Kohen Gadol operating, that he may come to go ahead and eat of the karbanos? But we learned, Rabbi Yehuda says, Af isha acheres mitakinon lo, shema tamos ishto. Because we'll say, let's go back to the first Mishnah. What did Rabbi Yehuda say? Rabbi Yehuda said that we established for him a backup wife. In the event that his wife dies, he should be able to be married for the Yom Kippur service. So listen to this, Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, Ve'i maise ishto. Now let's play this out. So Rabbi Yehuda is clearly concerned that what? That his wife is going to die. Now if his wife dies, that means what? He's going to be in a state of aninos. And yet Rabbi Yehuda still allows him to do the avodah and is not concerned that he will eat. Rabbi Yehuda, you're saying to yourself, eat. It's Yom Kippur.
Right.
So we're going to get to... Thank you. So we are gonna get this a little bit later. But what's interesting to Dr. Bosai is that we will see that the carbon musaf, part of the carbon musaf was a chatos. And part of the chatos actually had a consumption component. So we will see that there's actually a possibility that there was a sacrificial part of the Yom Kippur service that was actually consumed. Again, we're going to spend significant time on it in the future, so we're not going to get into it right now. But the point is, there is a consumption component, even on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, and yet you see what? Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned about that. See, here you have a situation where the Kohen Gadol himself could be an Onen, and yet what? And yet Rabbi Yehuda is allowing him to operate in the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, you see, Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned that a Kohen Gadol whose Makriv Onen may come to eat. To which the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Hachi Hashta Hasam, Kevan Yom Kippurim Hu, Dekuli Alma Lo Ka'achli, Hu Nami Lo Asi Lamecham. You can't compare the cases. In the case of Yom Kippur, Rabbi Yehuda said, remember, no one's eating. So because no one is eating, we are quite confident that the Kohen Gadol is not going to come to eat the sacrificial part also. Because again, obviously, the major dominant theme of the day is a Yom Tzom. So I'm not concerned. So okay, Kohen Gadol could be Makriv Onen, and there's no concern that he's going to come to consume the sacrificial parts. However, Hacha, the Kuli Ama Achli, Hunami Asal Emecha. But again, I'm also in a normal case, meaning when I say normal, I mean non-Yom Kippur case, no, there is a legitimate concern. If then everybody else is eating, the other Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash are also eating. And therefore, no, it's not a far-fetched concern to say that Lemaisa, the Kohen Gadol, as a result of being Makriv, may also come to go ahead and eat. So the Gemara says, V'chi ha'gavna, listen to this, V'chi ha'gavna, Michaili ala aninos. Now the Gemara says, Amara is a different kasha. So Rabbi Yehuda said, the previous kasha presupposes that the Kohen Gadol could become an Onen on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, but one second, would you ever have, based on our conversation yesterday, would you ever really have a situation where the Kohen Gadol is an Onen? After all, listen to this. V'hamigarsha. Rabbi Yehuda said, remember, because what's going to happen? He's going to divorce her. Now remember, this goes back to yesterday's sugya. Take a look at Rashi. V'hamigarsha. V'hachi ukimna This is what we established. The chazila demesa kadim va'ayil beis hakneses umashvi le legita dahi demesa gita lemafrei rabos. If you remember again, this is really the last version of the tanai that we had. Remember, we went through all these crazy tanaim yesterday, not tanaim, crazy tanaim yesterday. These conditions, and the last one we had is where he's giving two gittin, right? And one of the gittin is activated how? Through him stepping into the shul. He controls the process. So the Gemara yesterday suggested that if one of the wives is going to die, if he sees she's going to die, what does he do? He steps into the shul. Why does he step into the shul? Because also remember, part of the issue over here is these gittin are activated lemafrei retroactively. So he starts out Yom Kippur with two wives. But what's the goal? The goal is that by the time Yom Kippur is over, he's single. He has one wife. Now, the way he would do that is that Lemaisa, again, if he sees that one of the wives is going to die, now this is on Yom Kippur itself, he sees that she's going to die, so what does he do? He steps into the shul. Why does he step into the shul? Because by stepping into the shul, he activates her get retroactively, and therefore it turns out that from the beginning of Yom Kippur, he was only married to one woman. Now, Bosai, if he is activating her get retroactively, then what? Then Lemaisa, there's no aninos, right? Because remember, again, aninos is a din in relationship. It's a halachic state of mourning for a loved or a close relative who has died. If retroactively she's divorced, there's no aninos. To which the Gemara says, but one second. The Gemara says, Nehi da aninos lo chayli ale. Okay, you're going to tell me he's not a technical onen. Atrude lo mitrad. Is he not going to be mentally preoccupied with the loss of his wife? Meaning, the only reason he's not married to Rabosai is because of why? It's because of a halachic technicality to satisfy two batim. That's the only reason. But Lemaisa, again, Lemaisa, what's the whole concept? Why is Rabbi Huda concerned that even though technically a Kohen Gadol could offer an onen, we don't want him to do it Shema what? Shema that because he might come to Yitzhak Avonis. What's Rabbi Huda's logic? What's driving him? That when a person encounters loss, a person is preoccupied with the loss. So a person is not thinking clearly. So you're going to tell the Kohen Gadol, listen, Kohen Gadol, you have to give the karbanos, but don't eat. It's not the pshat that he's going to try to shirk his way. He's thinking, he just lost the loved one. Remember, it's actually compounded. Not only has he just lost the loved one, but what? He knows the levai is happening and he can't go. He knows that he wants to tear kriya, but he can't. So the Gemara says, that's the havamin. The havamin is the Gemara asked the kasha in my Yom Kippur, because you're right. Technically speaking, there's not going to be aninos by Yom Kippur because he's not technically married to her, but the logic of aninos still applies even if the technicality of aninos does not. Now, Bosai, remember, just to close out yesterday's sugya, remember, we don't worry about these tanoim for one simple reason, is that we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, we paskin like the Rabbanon in the Mishnah, and therefore, we don't set aside a backup wife. So because we don't set aside a backup wife, then Lamaisa, this whole discussion about Tanoim becomes a moot point for us. And the reason we don't set up a backup wife is because of exactly what the Rabbanon said in the Mishnah, which is, we're not Choshesh Lemisa. We don't operate with the assumption that people drop dead. People die, of course, people die, but in terms of structuring realities, I can't base a reality on the fact that somebody is going to just die. And therefore, we do not establish a backup wife for the Kohen Gadol, and therefore, again, the Maisa, we don't have to worry about all of these tonight. Fine, says the Mishnah. And I've also, by the way, that is Halach Lamaisa as well, that a Kohen Gadol is Makriv Onen. A Kohen Gadol does, in fact, a Kohen Hedjo does not, regular Kohen does not, but the Kohen Gadol is Makriv Onen. He offers the Karbanos even in a state of Aninos, but Lemaisa, the Rambam Paskins, he does not eat of the Karbanos. So he offers them, but does not eat of the Karbanos, and we are not Choshesh Haloch Lemaisa for the Chashash of Rabbi Yehuda. We're not concerned that if we allow him to eat, if we allow him to offer, he's going to come to eat. Says the Mishnah. Kol Shivas Hayom, and I will say now, this is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. All the 7 days that he's sequestered, Huzorek es Adam, he sprinkles the blood, umaktir es hakitores, and he offers the kitores the incense, umetiv es aneros, and he arranges, literally metiv actually means he cleans out. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Huzorek es Adam, shel temidin, kidei shehei ragil umizun ba'avodas umikipos. So we'll say, as we're going to see, during the 7 days, the Kohen Gadol does a lot of the avoda. And the reason for that is to get him accustomed to doing it. So he's going to sprinkle the blood of the daily offering. Metiv es aneros, Rashi says, medashin min efer hapsilos shekavu. So what he does is he cleans out the ash of the wicks. from the menorah. So we'll say what happens. So every single day, the Kohen Gadol is the one who's cleaning out the menorah and arranging the menorah. He's the one who's offering up the ketores. And he offers up the head and the hind leg of the karbanos. Now, I'll say that's for the 7 days of sequestration preparation. So we want to get him habituated with the avoda. And in general, ushar kol yomim. Rabosai, Kohen Gadol has rank. And therefore, if the Kohen Gadol shows up to the Beis HaMikdash one day, remember, Rabosai, there are 24 Mishmoros, there are 24 shifts of Kohanim, and each shift is comprised of multiple families. And each family gets, each shift gets its own week in the Beis HaMikdash, and that week is divided up among the families. If one day the Kohen Gadol comes in, and he says, I want to give the Karban, the Kohen Gadol takes rank, he takes precedence over everyone. So therefore, nobody can say, listen, it's my turn. Kohen Gadol is the Kohen Gadol. Whenever he wants to come in and offer karbanos, he can. She Kohen Gadol makriv chilek barosh, the nodal chilek barosh. I will say because the Kohen Gadol has the right to go and offer up karbanos when he wants. That's nodal chilek barosh. He goes ahead and takes his portion. And not only that, he can also take whatever portion of karbanos he wants. I will say, remember, there are certain karbanos that have a consumption component. If the Kohen Gadol comes in and wants to claim that portion as his own, he has the absolute right to do it. So he takes precedence in terms of doing the avoda itself, and he gets precedence in terms of taking actual consumption portions as well. Look at Rashi. If the Kohen Gadol comes in any day, he gets precedence to offer up whatever he wants. And the Kohanim who are on shift, who are on duty, don't have the right to stop him. Makriv chelik barosh, roshu lahakdir lahakriv kol chelik shivchar. He has the right to do any offering he wants. And barosh, mana yafa shivchalo. And he also has the ability to take whatever piece of meat he wants as well. Says the Gemara. It's good to be king. It's good to be Kohen Gadol. So says the Gemara. I will say, obviously, you know, the interesting part is power is often vested with those who know how to use it responsibly. A real Kohen Gadol would probably never actually to do these particular things, out realizing that it's going to disrupt the seder of the way things work, and it's going to create a certain level of animosity as well. So just because he has the power doesn't mean he ultimately takes it. Says the Gemara, Man Tana, who is the author of our Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chista, Delok Rabbi Akiva. One thing I know for sure is it's not Rabbi Akiva. Why? The Rabbi Akiva, Ha'amar, so why can't it be Rabbi Akiva? Because Rabbi Akiva says, Ha'amar, Tahor shenafla alav haza tamaso, because Rabbi Kiva says, I will say that if a person who is tahor gets sprinkled with the afer of the para aduma, so lemaisa he becomes tame. And I will say, the Gemara says over here the reason why the Gemara is suggesting that the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Kiva, because again, our Mishnah also has an understanding, although we saw this as an implicit understanding, we'll see where this comes from, that the Kohen Gadol is sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Aduma all 7 days. We already saw this earlier in the Gemara. So the Gemara says our Mishnah cannot reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva holds that Lamaisa, let me say this differently. We've already established that the Kohen Gadol is sprinkled with the Afer of the Parah Aduma every single day. That we've established. We've established that. Now I will say, here's why it's a problem. Now, what did our Mishnah just tell us? Our Mishnah told us that throughout the 7 days, what is the Kohen Gadol doing? He's engaging in sacrificial service. So the Gemara says our Mishnah cannot reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because according to Rabbi Akiva, if the Kohen Gadol is being sprinkled with the Afer of the Parah Aduma every single day, then what can't he do? He can't do sacrificial service. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that if a Tahor person is sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Aduma, he becomes Tamei. And therefore, if he's Tamei, he's precluded from doing the Avodah. So the Gemara says, Look, Rabbi Akiva, Ha'amar Tar Shnafal Avazah, Tamaso, Heichi Avid Avodah. How would he be able to do the avoda? So our Mishnah that says that the Kohen Gadol does the avoda all 7 days, and remember, building on the assumption that we've already established, that he sprinkled all 7 days with Efer Paraduma, the Mishnah can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva. Disanya, v'hiza hatar ala tameh. As I say, what does the pasuk say? The tar, literally the person who's tar, will sprinkle on the person who is tameh. So Rabbi Akiva darshins, al hatameh tahar, va'al hatar tameh. What does this teach you? It teaches you that if you sprinkle, if you sprinkle on a person who's tamei, he becomes tar. But if you sprinkle on a person who's tar, he becomes tamei. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. These are the words of Rabbi Akiva. Look at Rashi. Ala tamei tar va tar tamei. Im hiza ala tamei naase tar. Yes, if you sprinkle on someone who is tamei, he becomes tar. Im hiza ala tar naase tamei. V'yolif taima me'al ha-tamei yisir kimifarish le-kamon. So we'll say, interestingly enough, what Rabbi Akiva is dashing over here is that phrase al hatameh. Obviously, I'm supposed to say this section is talking about paraduma, it's talking about somebody who's tamei meis. So all you need to say is what? V'hiza hatar. The person who is tar will sprinkle. And we know who is the subject, who is the recipient of the sprinkling. The fact that the Torah has to go ahead and say al hatameh, Rabbi Akiva dashens means what? It's telling you that who is the person who becomes tamei? Excuse me, who is the person who becomes tahor? Only a person who is tamei. But if a person was already tahor, then sprinkling actually makes them tamei. The chacham say, ein hadvarim halalu amurim ela bidvarim hamakablin tuma. No. You know what the pasuk is coming to teach you? I agree that the al hatamei phrase is superfluous. So what is it coming to teach you? It's coming to teach you that the waters of the paraduma only have an effect on something that is mekabel tuma. Look at Rashi for just a moment. The Chachamim Omrim, Ala Tamei Ledrasha Asa, Lomar She'ein Divrei Haza Amurim Ela B'Dvarim HaMekabim Tuma. Ava B'Dvarim She'ein Mekabim Tuma, Ein Haza Hanitezes Alein Kruya Hazia. We'll say, listen, so the Chachamim will say, you know what, Ala Tamei is superfluous. What is it coming to teach me? That the only time that sprinkling is significant is on objects or items that are Mekabel Tuma. But if something is not Mekabel Tuma, then the act of sprinkling is meaningless. So I will say, what does this mean? What this means is we're going to see a following concept, that lemaisa, if you go ahead and use the water of the para aduma for some type of non-purification purpose, then the waters become puzzle for further purification. The halacha is you're not permitted to do avoda, you're not permitted to do work with the ashes, the water of the para aduma. If you do work, it invalidates the mixture. What's the definition of work? Definition of work is anything that's not purification in process. So therefore, technically speaking, if I were to go ahead, and we'll see this in just a moment, and intentionally sprinkle the water of the Parah Aduma on something that is not Mekabel Tuma, like on an animal or on an object, then Lemaisa, that would invalidate those waters from being used anymore for purification purposes. So therefore, the Chachamim say that, so what they're really arguing about is how to dash in the phrase Al Hatameh. Rabbi Akiva says Al Hatameh comes to teach you what? That the purification process works on somebody that's tameh. But if you sprinkle on somebody that's tahor, then what? Then what? That makes them tameh. The Chachamim say no. The Torah is teaching you the only thing you should sprinkle on is something that is mekabel tuma. But if you sprinkle on something that's not mekabel tuma, you will invalidate the waters. So the Gemara says, Mahi, where does this machlokes occur? Kidisnan. Niskavein lahazos al behema. Well, so this is in the Chachamim. If you had in mind to sprinkle on an animal, v'hiza ala adam, but you ended up sprinkling on a person. So we'll say again, you had in mind to do something that was not appropriate, because sprinkling on an animal is not mekabel tuma. A live animal is not mekabel tuma. So sprinkling on the animal would have been essentially an act of labor, an act of work, with the water of the paraduma, which would have invalidated it. But you end up sprinkling it on a person. So what happens? Im yesh be'ezov yeshna. So we'll say, remember, now when we say it invalidates the waters, it doesn't invalidate all the waters. Remember the process for the paraduma, what do? You take your ashes, you mix it with water, and then what do? You take your hyssop, right? Your azov, which is a plant, you dip in the hyssop in it, and what do? And you sprinkle it on the person. So when we say invalidate the waters, what we're talking about now is the waters that are on the hyssop. The water that's in the receptacle is totally fine. So the shaila is now, I had in mind to sprinkle on an animal, but the animal ran away and somebody else walked in its place. I ended up sprinkling on a person. So what does the Gemara say? Yeshna. If there's more water still on the Ezo, the water is fine. The water is still valid for future purification purposes. Why, Rabosai? Because as much as I had Kavanah to do the wrong thing, at the end of the day, what? I did the right thing. And therefore, it's not considered as if I did work with the water of the Paraduma. And therefore, the water is still good. However, Niskavi lahazus ala adam v'hiza ala behema. But if my intention was to sprinkle on a person, but what? I ended up sprinkling on a behema. Then Rabosai, essentially, now I've done an act of work. An act of avoda with words of the paraduma. Im yesh be'ezov, if there's any waters left on the hyssop, lo yishne, you may not use them for any further sprinkling. Why? Why? Those waters have become invalidated because they've been used for some non-purification process. My time with Rabbi Akiva. So we'll say that's the logic of the Chacham. So the Chachamim therefore say that ala tomei comes to teach you that you should only sprinkle the waters of the Paradum Asin as Mekabel Tumah. If it's, you sprinkle it and it's not Mekabel Tumah, you have invalidated the rest of the waters that are still on the hyssop plant. Rabbi Akiva says, no, Alatame means Paraduma only works on a person who's tummy, but if you sprinkle on a person who's tar, then he becomes tummy. My term is Rabbi Kiva. What's Rabbi Kiva's logic? Nichto Rachmana Vihizar Hatahar Alov. Let the pasuk just say Vihizar, that the person who is pure will sprinkle on him. My al hatame. Why does it have to say that he will sprinkle on the person who's a tummy? Shmamina alatame tahar. Because Rabbi Kiva says, the drasha is, it comes to teach you that it's only if he sprinkles on a person who's tamei does he become tahar, but a person who is tahar actually becomes tamei. To which the Gemara says, Rabbanan, highly dvarm hamekablim to mahuda asa. And the Rabbanan say, no, Allah tamei comes to teach me that the waters of the paradumah are only effective if sprinkled on something that is mekabel tumah, which essentially Rabbosai means a person. Means a person, maybe Kalim, but we'll see that as well. Kalim don't need this level of purification. Aval hocha kavachomer, but here it's a kavachomer. So this bless you. This is the Chachamim's kavachomer. Imala tomei tahar. I will say. So the Chachamim say like this. Rabbi Akiva, come on. If the waters of the Para Aduma are able to make a person who is tamei tahar, ala tahar lakol shekin. Then if you're gonna tell me if they make a person who's tamei tahar, then certainly bless you. If they are sprinkled on a person. And they are sprinkled on a person who is tamei, or excuse me, who is tahar, all the more so. Rabbi Akiva will say, I know that it doesn't make sense logically, but that's the whole chap of Para Aduma. After all, what did Shlomo say? V'hainu dekamer Shlomo Hamelech, Amarti, I have said achachma. I thought I was wise. V'hi rechoka mimeni. But yet wisdom is so far from me. Rabbi Akiva posits that Shlomo Hamelech was saying that about Para Aduma. And Shlomo Melech was saying, you know, I thought I understood everything, but there's this part of Paraduma that defies any logic, that somehow the same waters that make the person who is Tamei Tahar make the Tahar Tamei. V'rabbanan, and so we'll say, so remember, everyone agrees that this Pasuk in Mishlei by Shlomo HaMelech, where he says, I thought I was wise, Amarti achak echkama v'rechokum many, but it's very far from me. Everybody agrees it refers to Paraduma. The Shaila is one aspect of Paraduma. So Rabbi Akiva says it refers to the fact that the same waters that make the person who's tamei tahar make a person who's tahar tamei. The Chum say, no, that's not what it refers to. For Rabbanon, hahu lemaze ulemazin alav tahar v'nogea bahen tamei. The Rabbanon say, no, I'll tell you what it refers to. It refers to the fact that the person who sprinkles it and the person upon whom it is sprinkled are both tahar, and yet what? Someone who touches the waters becomes tamei. Becomes tamei. So the Gemara says, v'nogea bahen tamei. Umazetar, now is that true that the person who sprinkles the waters of the paradum becomes, it remains tahar, but the Torah says, Umaze mehanidi chavis bigadav. The Torah explicitly says that the one who sprinkles the water, chavis bigadav literally means cleans his clothing. It means you have to immerse your clothing in a mikvah. So the Gemara says, my mazeh. So the Rabbanah says, oh no, what does it mean to sprinkle? No geya, it means ones who touch. No, that's not true. V'haksiv mazeh, v'haksiv nogeya. It's not true. The Torah speaks out the one who sprinkles. The Torah speaks out the one who touch. So the Gemara says, v'od mazeh ba'i kibus begadim, ba'i kibus begadim, nogeya lo ba'i kibus begadim. And then furthermore, is that going to be true that the one who sprinkles does not require immersion of his clothing in the mikvah, and the one who touches does require? Ela mai mazeh, rather, what does mazeh mean? Nosei. It means carries. So we'll say the part of Paraduma that seems to defy logic is what? That the one who goes ahead and sprinkles is tahar. The one who gets sprinkled upon is tahar. But yet what? The one who carries the water of the Paraduma is what? Becomes tamei. So Gemara says, v'nichtov rachmana nosei. So if that's really true, that the sprinkler means one who carries, then why don't you call it Nose? Why do you call Nose? Again, now what we're saying is Maze doesn't literally mean sprinkler. Maze means what? The one who carries the water. So why don't you just say that? Why doesn't the Torah just say Nose? Why does the Torah say Maze if it means Nose? Oh, Hakamashmalan Diba'inan Shir Hazah. Okay, so why does it come to teach you? It teaches you that you only become tummy through carrying the waters of the Paraduma if what? If you're carrying a requisite shir. I've also said, not all that different than Shabbos. Remember again, by Shabbos, you're only chayiv for otzah for carrying an object if what? If you're carrying a significant object, a significant amount, it has to have a shir. So too, the Gemara is suggesting over here that in order to become tummy through carrying the waters of Paraduma, what has to happen? you have to carry the shear of the waters. If you carry less than the shear, then you don't become tame. The Gemara says, that's fine. Honey, chalamandamar hazot tzricha shear. That's fine according to the thing that says that there's a shear for sprinkling. Remember, it's a machlokes. And there are those who say that what? That there is no shear for the sprinkling. If that's the case, then why would you call the one who carries mazeh? So the Gemara says, no. People say, no. Understand, even the one who says that there's no shear for sprinkling, what does that mean? There's no shear for the amount of water you have to actively sprinkle on the person. That's what it's saying is, for the person who has to sprinkle, for the sprinklee, if that's the word, right? For the sprinklee, for the guy, for the person who's being sprinkled upon, there's no shear for the amount of water you have to sprinkle on him. Aval, but everyone agrees that what? That you must have a certain shear of actual mixture, paraduma mixture. In the kli, this nan, kama yehe bahen vihe kadeaza, how much water do you have? How much paraduma water do you have to have in the receptacle in order for it to be a proper haza? Kadei sheyitbo roshe givolin viyaza. In order that what? Enough water that you could dip in the tops of the hyssop plant and sprinkle it on the individual. So both sides, everybody agrees there's a shear, but there's just a shailin. Everybody agrees that there's a shear in the amount of water, I'll call it water ash mixture, that you have to have. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is there a shear that has to be sprinkled upon the tummy individual? Abai or Abai says, afilu tim Rabbi Akiva. So both sides, remember, this whole exercise, this whole Omid was for what? Was to establish authorship of the Mishnah. And the way the Gemara just wanted to start off was saying, our Mishnah can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, because where does Rabbi Akiva hold? Rabbi Akiva holds that Lemaisa, if you sprinkle the ashes of the Parah Aduma upon a person who is Tahar, so what happens? The person becomes Tameh. Therefore, the Mishnah can't reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva, because everybody agrees that during the 7 days of sequestration preparation, we are sprinkling the Kohen Gadol with Parah Aduma ashes, water ash mixture, and yet what does the Mishnah say over here? He's still doing the Avodah. Stay for it can't be Rabbi Akiva. So we'll say that's how this whole thing started, to establish authorship of the Mishnah. Then once you started to Rabbi Baraduma, okay, so the dam burst and everything came out. The fundamental machlok is Rabbi Huna and the Rabbanan, and everything is centered on what? How you dash in two words. Al Hatame. Al Hatame. Rabbi Akiva says Al Hatame means that dafka, if you sprinkle on a person who's tame, he becomes tar, on a person who's tar, he becomes tame. And the Rabbanan say, no, Al Hatame just means you have to sprinkle on something that's Mekabel Tuma. But if you sprinkle on something that's not Mekabel Tuma, then what happens? It invalidates the waters that are on the hyssop itself. So now the Gemara comes full circle. Abai says, I feel the same Rabbi Akiva. I think you guys have it all wrong. The Mishnah can be Rabbi Akiva. How so? Listen to this. This is such a simple solution. The Ovid Kula Yoma. No, because I will say, you're assuming that when is the Kohen Gadol getting sprinkled? At the beginning of the day. Abai says, no, I'll give you a much simpler solution. Let him do the Avoda of the whole day, and then what? And then Ulepanya Madwale. And then when do you sprinkle him, Rabbi Osai? At the end of the day. Let him do all of the Avoda. Finish up right before evening, you're going to sprinkle him. Tavil. He'll go to the mikvah. The Avid Her of Shemesh. And Rabbi Osai, even according to Rabbi Akiva. So let's say he does become Tameh through the sprinkling of Paraduma. No problem. Let him do the Avoda the whole day. Sprinkle him right before evening. Sprinkle him, he becomes tummy, and then what? Let him go to the mikvah, and he's totally fine. Herav Shemesh, and he's fine. Sabai says the Mishnah can reflect the view of Rabbi Akiva as well. Okay. Umaktira Sakatoras Meitiv Esaner. So what did the Mishnah say? He goes ahead and he offers up the Ketores, and Meitiv Esaner literally means he prepares the menorah for kindling. So the Gemara says, Alma Ketores Beresha Vahadr Neros. Now what the Gemara picks up on over here is the order. You see from here that what is the order? The order is that first you do Ketores, and then only afterwards do you go ahead and set up the Neros. So the Gemara says, Or Minhu, or raise a Kasha. Misha Zach Nebo. So what the Gemara is going to now do is quote a couple of Mishnayos from Meseches Tomid. And what's going to happen over here is the Mishnayos from Meseches Tomid are going to give a different order than the order that our Mishnah puts down. So our Mishnah seems to indicate that first there's Ketores, and then only afterwards is there the menorah. So the Mishnah in Tum is going to contradict that. Misha Zacha Bedishon HaMizbeach HaPinimi. So the Mishnah over here talks about the idea that they used to draw lots for the different avodos. So look at Rashi for just a moment. Kol Misha Zacha, Rashi says, Shalosh Mishnayos HaMizbeach HaTamid, Seduros Zuach HaZu. There are three consecutive Mishnayos and Maseches Tamid that are arranged one after the other. So what happens? Zuachar zu kisidra avodoso. Misha zocha lepayis v'dishon ha-mizveach ha-panimi. Okay, so actually, let's look at the Gemara. Fine. So let's look at the Gemara. Misha zocha v'dishon ha-mizveach ha-panimi. So remember, the first thing that was established was dishon mizveach ha-panimi, removal of the ash of the inner mizveach. And then they drew lots for who is going to go ahead and get to do the service of the menorah. Also remember, the menorah need not be done by the Kohen Gadol. The menorah can be done by any Kohen. Who is going to get to do the Ketores? We'll say, so what do you see from here? What do you see from here? You see from here a different order. What's the order according to Maseches Tamid? The order is menorah and then Ketores. And yet, what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said Ketores and then menorah. So which one is it? Amar Rav Huna Man Tana Tamid. Who is the author of the Mishnayos in Tamid? Also now remember, the Mishnayos in Tamid are what's called the Stam Mishnah. A Mishnah is without attribution. So we generally try to figure out who is the author of the Stam Mishnah because it helps us in many ways. So the Gemara says, who is the author of the Stam Mishnayos? Who is the Tana, the Stam Mishnayos in Maseches Tamid? It's Rabbi Shimon Ish Hamitzvah. That's the Stam Tana. Okay, and therefore, again, I will say, what the Gemara is kind of saying just simply is, you don't have to worry if the Mishnah is in Tamid, dispute the Mishnah in Yuma that we just had. Why? Different Tanoim. So the Tana in Tamid is Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah. So Gemara says, 1 second. Are you sure that it's Rabbi Shimon Isha Mitzvah? After all, we've actually heard a different sheet of Shem Isha Mitzvah. This none. But listen to this. Here, another Mishnah Maseches Tamid, I will say. Another Mishnah. Remember that these are all consecutive Mishnayos. So what does the Mishnah say? Bado the Karen Mizrachis Tsifonis. When the Kohen comes, this is on the Mizbeach. When the Kohen comes to Mizrachis Tsifonis, literally is the northeastern corner. No saying Mizrachis Tsifona. He sprinkles the blood or throws the blood on the northeast corner. Ma'arabes Deromis. When he then comes to the southwest corner, no sin Ma'arabes Deroma. He places the blood on the southwest corner. So that's the Mishnah in Tamid. V'tani Allah, and yet it was stated about this. Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah Mishaneh V'tamid. Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah has a different order for the sprinkling, for the applications of the blood. What happens? What does he say? First, Mizrach HaTzafonis, he agrees. First, we go to the northeast corner. No sin Mizrach HaTzafonis. And yes, you apply blood on the northeast corner. Ma'arav is Romans. Then the Kohen goes to the southwest corner. No sin Ma'arav. First, he puts the blood on the south. The Acher Kach no sin Deroma. And then he puts the blood on the west. So we'll say, what do you see? What do you see over here? You see that Lemaisa, Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, has a different order in the Mishnah. Rabbi will say, why is this important? Because Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah is arguing on Tanakama, which indicates what?
He's not the Tanakama.
Which means then you just tried to attribute authorship of the Mishnah Yisim Tamid, which contradict the Mishnah Yuma, to Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah. And you want to say it's Machlokes Tanoim. Then you want to say you can't attribute it to Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah, because Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah is on record as arguing with the Tanakama. Therefore, he's not the author of the Mishnah Yisim Tamid. So what do we do? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Man Tana Seder Yoma. Oh, no. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no. Who is the author of the Mishnah Yuma? That's Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah. Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah is the author of our Mishnah. He's the Tana. He's the anonymous Tana in our Mishnah. So the Gemara says, okay. So at least now what we've done is we've said that although there is a stir, there is a contradiction between sacrificial order in Yuma and in Tamid. In Tamid, it has again first Neros and then Ketores. And an argument, an our Mishnah has Ketores and then Neros. Not a problem. Different Tana. Now the Gemara says, oh. The Rami Seder Yuma. Huh, but we have a bigger kasha. I'm not worried about Yuma to Tamid anymore. What am I worried about? Yuma to Yuma. Because you have a contradiction in Yuma. What happened in Yuma? This not. I will say we will see this later on. This the Gemara points out over this is in Chof Heh Amud Aleph. This not. Payis Hashem. I will say the Mishnah later on will also talk about the different lotteries that they drew. So what happens? Payis Hashem. When they drew the second lottery, what did they determine? Mishochet. Mizorek, mi medashin, mizbeach hapinim. They would decide who's going to shech the carbon tamid. Who's going to sprinkle the blood? Who's going to remove the ash from the inner mizbeach? Mi medashin es hamenorah. Who's going to remove the ash from the menorah? Mi maale evarim lekeves. Who is going to go ahead and take the limbs up to the kevesh to the ramp. Pais Hashlishi, that was the second. That was the second lottery. What did they decide on this third lottery? Pais Hashlishi, Chadoshim Likitores Bo'u Ve'fisu. Well, so it was interesting. What they wanted to always make sure is that everyone got a chance to go out and do the Ketores. Why? The Ketores is a skula for wealth. Skula for wealth. So they wanted all of, they were always made sure to make sure that every coin always got an opportunity. So they would say, who has never done the Ketores before? Go ahead, come forward. Ve'fisu. And what happens? I'm Rabbi. So I'll say, what do you see from here? What you see from here is that Lemaisa, the menorah comes before the Ketores. Right, in this order over here, the menorah comes before the Ketores. And therefore, what that contradicts our Mishnah, because our Mishnah said that Ketores came before menorah. Here we're saying, and now this is in Yuma. And now in Yuma, we're saying Ketores comes before, the menorah comes before Ketores, to which the Gemara says, Om Rabbi Lokasha. No, it's not a contradiction. Ha bahatavas shtei neros, kan bahatavas chamesh neros. We'll say, this is fascinating. So Abai says, the menorah was done in two stages. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi, this third wide line in Rashi, Kan Bahatavas Shtei Neros, Rashi says, Lekaman Beperek Shlishi, Amrina, later on we will see, Shemafsik Bahatavas HaNeros, Meshehetit Chamesh, Posek Umamtin Ad Shenaase Avod Acher. So we'll say, the way it would work in the Beis HaMikdash is, the Kohen would set up five of the Neros, five, I'm calling it candles, but you understand, I really mean lights, five of the lights, then they would stop. They would stop and they would do another Avod, the Bein Taim, And then they would do the Choser Uleitim Shtayim, and they would go ahead and then do the remaining two candles. I will say, what we will see is, so everyone agrees on this process. They would do five, stop, do another Avodah, do the remaining two. We'll see why they did that. The Machlokas is going to be what? What they did in the interim. So we'll say, you could understand how, technically speaking, you could phrase this both ways. You could phrase it that the Ketores came before the Neros, or you could phrase it that the Ketores came after the Neros. What does it depend on? It depends on what your perspective is. Are you looking at the five, or are you looking at the two? If you're looking at the five, then Ein Achinami, the menorah came first, and then Ketores afterwards. If you're looking at the two, then Lemaisa Ketores came first, and then menorah afterwards. So the Gemara says, Lememra de Ketores Lemafsek Lehu. Now that only works if you assume that which they are doing in the middle of the menorah was in fact the Ketores. So the Gemara says, "V'ha'bayi misader seidem arachum shein the Gemara." Be'er Abayi established the order of the service according to the Gemara. Bidam hatamid mafsik lehu. Abayi was the one who said that what? That in fact what they did in the middle of the menorah was not the Ketores, but rather was what? Was the sprinkling of the blood of the tamid. Amri lo kasha. It's not a contradiction. Hahi la abashol halurabbanon. I will say it's reflective of two different opinions. Disanya lo yitev es haneros va'achar kach yaktir. A person should not set up the neros and then afterwards do the sacrificial service. Ella, yeah, excuse me, do the Ketores. Ella yaktir va'achar kach yaktir. Rather, what should you do? The rabbanon say you should first do the Ketores and afterwards set up the menorah. Abashol, Omer Abashol says, Meitiv va'achar kach machtir. Abishol says, no, you should first do the menorah and afterwards do the Ketores. So we'll say, the way the Gemara ultimately ends off, so the Gemara gives a couple of different resolutions. Resolution number one is that maybe Lemaisa, the Machlokas is just a matter of semantics. Because maybe everybody is agreeing that first, and everybody's going to split up the menorah service. You're going to first do five candles and afterwards do two, and you're doing something else in the middle. What's the something else? The something else is Ketores. And therefore, okay, the fact that different Mishnayos phrase the order differently is not really a kasha. Because you can say that Ketores comes before menorah because it does come before the last two. Or you can say that it comes after menorah because it comes after the first five. Now the Gemara rejects that and says, no, it's simpler. There's a fundamental Machlokas as to the order of the service in the Beis HaMikdash. The Rabbanon say, between the Rabbanon and Abishol, because as we're going to say again, Abishol is going to say that first you do the menorah and after the Ketores, and the Rabbanon will say, no, first you do the Ketores, and then afterwards the menorah. All right, they will say, to be continued, to the Machlokes tomorrow, Mir Tzashem.